Okay, it is September 24th, 2010. I am with Una Kunz, and she is going to talk today about her Irish family. And Una, will you begin by telling us what your name is?
It's Una Kunz.
Where and when were you born?
I was born here in Great Falls in 1945.
And so you've spent all your life in Great Falls?
Almost. For about 5 years I lived out in Washington State, but the rest of the time. And then actually our family moved out to a farm near Belt, and that's where I went to high school. But my adult life, most of it's been here.
And what kind of jobs have you had?
Well, I started off as a teacher, moved on to being a librarian, spent most of my life as librarian. And then the last 10 years, I worked as a massage therapist.
And what do you do for a living now?
I'm retired.
And are you married?
No, I'm not.
And then you probably do not have any children?
No, I don't.
All right. Do you know when your ancestors left Ireland and where did they leave from?
Yes, I have three Irish grandparents. So, first of all, my mother's father was Roger, well, in Ireland it was Corr, C-O-R-R. When he came over here, he changed it to Curry, C-U-R-R-Y. And, let's see, I have done a little research on him. So he made his intention to be a citizen in New York in 1893. And he came from, I believe it was called Irish Town in Mayo County, Ireland, and that was a part of Ireland that was hit very hard by the famine, although he's, you know, was not living during that time. Then he became a citizen here in Montana in 1900. Do you want me to do all three of my grandparents?
Sure, that would be fine.
That?
You bet.
Okay. Then his wife, my grandmother, on my mother's side, came from Tyrone. She was born in an area called Ballyholen, and she came here with her brother in 1902. Her uncle had sent for them, and the story is that the uncle sent for her sister and brother, and last minute her sister canceled out, and so she came on her sister's passport. Though she was Sarah Ann, she went by Minnie here, probably afraid to change it back. But when I was a teenager, she finally told us her real name. So it took a long time. But she came here with her brother. They landed in Quebec, traveled through Canada, and came right to Montana, and went to Nyhart, where their uncle lived on a dairy farm.
What was her uncle's name?
He was Rafferty, Frank Rafferty. And that was an uncle on her mother's side. And in truth, two of the Rafferty brothers were there, I don't know, mining, whatever. And the story is that when they finally got to Nyhart, the uncle had died. And one of them did die, but the other one was still living. So they stayed with him a while and then finally came to Great Falls a few years later.
And was Sarah's name, her sister's name on her passport, or was that her real name? Sarah Ann.
Oh, her sister's name, Minnie, was Minnie. On the passport.
Okay.
And so she stayed with that name.
Even though her name was Sarah, her given name.
Yes.
Okay.
Her citizenship and everything says Minnie.
Okay.
She just stayed with it.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the third grandparent, that's on my dad's side. She was Winifred Cahalan. And she was born in Iowa, but it was her father, Patrick McKenna, or not Patrick Cahalan, who came from Tipperary. So, three different areas of Ireland.
Do you know why, other than you've told us about Sarah, do you know why either of your great-grandfathers left Ireland? Have you ever heard any stories?
I don't know much about the Cahalan. I know a little more about the Curry. This is a story my mother told me. Apparently his parents wanted him to become a priest, and he did not want to, so he headed off to America.
Okay.
Yeah. And he had brothers here already. Two older brothers were already here.
Do you know what age he was when he left Ireland?
Oh, let me think a little bit. Let me figure it. He was born in 1870, and I believe he was in New York in 1893. So that would make him about 23.
Okay, mm-hmm. Great. Mm-hmm. And what does your Irish ancestry mean to you personally?
That's a hard question. I think, well, growing up here, at least on my mother's side, which is kind of the Curry McKenna, they formed a very close-knit, extended family. And in a lot of ways, we grew up almost, you know, my cousins were almost more like brothers and sisters. I think that was one thing they gave us. I think my grandmother, she was a McKenna, but Curry, was very strong in her faith. I think both of my grandmothers were, and it was the Catholic faith. And so that was something that was very much a part of your life. And my grandmother Curry was someone who was very kind of sedate, quiet, very wise, kind of a strong woman. So that kind of calm, you know, deal with things type. But what I saw in the men was a lot of drinking. So they get together and they really partied. Mm-hmm. And I will say the women would sit in the living room in a row and the men would be in the kitchen all drinking. So I kind of thought everyone did that. And it took me a long time to realize not everybody drank too much on the holidays. But they had great fun. They went camping in the summer times and they got together at the holidays. But a funeral or a wedding was a time to...
Did you ever hear any stories that the men might have been sharing while they were having their party? Or were you more focused on the women?
I was probably more with the women. You know, I know my dad would tell stories about things that they did. But it wasn't necessarily at the parties, yeah.
All right, and... we've talked about when your family first came to the United States and where they first settled, and that was because they had acquaintances or family in that area. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Especially
and,
my grandmother.
Mm-hmm. And how did they make their living?
Well, my grandfather, Roger Curry, when he first arrived in New York, I have his driver's license. He was a hackney coach mm-hmm. driver, so it was with a horse, mm-hmm. and I've got it in here, yes, and it's 1893.
Okay.
So that's what he did, and I don't know how long he was there. At some point, he came out to Montana. His older brother, Michael, was here in Great Falls, and so he wasn't here maybe a few years. I think he worked at the smelter, and then he went into the Spanish-American War and was there for a couple of years. And I do have some documents in here. When he was in the Philippines, he had malaria and intestinal, I guess you'd say, infections and so forth that bothered him the rest of, he was discharged because he was so sick. So when he came back to Great Falls, he always had problems with that. There's a foreman here that he filled out saying he could not do physical labor anymore because of that. But he did work at the smelter a little bit more, and then I think most of the last years of his working life, he was a fireman. But I will say, you know, where they lived in Great Falls, he came from a rural background. And they had a chicken house, and they had a milk cow, and they had a garden. So, you know, there was some of that farmy culture that came with them.
Mm-hmm. And how about the women in your background? Were they mostly homemakers?
Yes.
Or did either of them have work outside the home?
Yeah. My grandmother, Minnie McKenna Curry, stayed at home. My other grandmother, Winifred Cahallan, her first husband died maybe 5-6 years after they married, was kicked in the head by a horse. So she had these two little boys to take care of. And she worked in a post office, she worked as a telephone operator. Eventually, she came from a very musical family, and maybe I'll talk about that a little more later. But her brothers had, they were traveling musicians, and they traveled from Chicago out to Washington, and they finally homesteaded in Montana, asked her to come out and teach their kids and her kids and be a teacher. And I don't know, there wasn't much training needed in those days, but she ended up teaching in rural schools for many years, and then finally ended up teaching, I think it was piano, violin, and guitar. But she even filled in 1 year at the College of Great Falls for the music teacher there. So she did have, you know, some pretty good background, but she did work.
Other than what you've mentioned about the Curry name being changed, have any of the other family names undergone changes, and were there any stories that you heard about those?
Not really. With the McKenna, I actually went to Ireland, and it was McKenna there. But when I told the priest I was looking for McKennas, he just said, everybody here is a McKenna. And in doing research, I finally found out that there's all these different strains, and so we're Elish McKenna. And then the Rafferty's are Cobb Rafferty's. Yeah.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. Are there any traditional first names or nicknames in your family? And if so, what are they?
Oh my goodness, they use the same names over and over. I have to tell you this little story. It's a little sidetracked, but it illustrates it. Roger's older brother, Michael Curry, came here with friend cousin Luke Curry, same name, same town. In Irish town, they were both sons of Luke Curry with a mother, Mary. And of course, the Irish named their first son Luke. Both Michael and Luke named their first sons Luke. Their first daughter's Mary, and they lived here in Great Falls, so it gets a little confusing. Then Michael also had a brother, Luke, who came out to Great Falls. And so at one point, there were four Luke Currys in Great Falls. There was also my grandmother, Minnie McKenna Curry. Her mother was Catherine, so she named her daughter Catherine. And some of the Currys also named their daughters Catherine. I have a sister, Catherine. That's one name that's common. My one grandmother was Winifred on my dad's side, but my mother was Winifred. And her nickname is Una. That's Irish Gaelic for Winifred. So my Una is after the Gaelic. That's another one that kind of went through. Lots of Patricks, Michaels. In the McKennas, it's Frank over and over, and Catherine again. Trying to think. John, Francis, Margaret was a woman's name used over and over. Those are the main ones that I can think of.
Okay. Did your family have any naming traditions at baptism or namings? Did they have any practices that you grew up with?
Not that I know of. Mm-mm.
Okay. All right. And let's see. You were born in the U.S., so you are not a first generation immigrant. So just reading the text here for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of entertainment, home entertainment, did you grow up with? Was there storytelling? Did you have music? Any kind of craft traditions?
Well, I think one might be music. In the Cahalan family, there were 17 children, and they lived on a farm in Iowa. And I forget, my grandmother once listed all the instruments they had. But I think, you know, There were 11 boys, so the younger ones, there was no place for them on the farm. So they're the ones that formed the Gehalen Brothers Harp Orchestra, five younger brothers. And sometimes some of their sisters, including my grandmother, traveled with them. But she would talk about going to silent theaters, and her brothers would run the movie and she'd play the piano. And one brother would tell her whether to play fast or slow or what kind of music to play while the other one was running the movie. So she, I think, kept a lot of music in with my dad and his brother. My uncle had a beautiful singing voice, Jack Kuntz, and I think he kind of passed it on with his family. Most of us learned to play at least one instrument and were in band and so forth. On my mother's side, Mom told me that when she was a kid, her parents would invite the Irish friends and relatives over. They'd roll back the rugs and dance the Irish jigs and whatnot in the living room. And there were five girls and one boy in that family. The girls seemed to love to sing and dance. That's how I think my mom met my dad. They were great dancers. And so even after they were married, they did square dancing, or if they went out for an evening, it would be to dance. So a lot of music in that way. When we got together with our big Christmas Eve, different of us cousins would be asked to perform. And somebody, I would play piano, another cousin might sing. So that music kind of stayed with us. That would be the biggest thing. I think my Gehalen grandmother, Winnie Gehalen Kuntz, did a lot of needlepoint, embroidery, that kind of thing. Tatting, she taught me how to tat. I have her little tatting shuttle from way back when. I think those are the main things.
Okay, wonderful. Were you involved in any sports? And did you ever learn to play any Gaelic games? Was that part of your family?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. And tell me a little bit about your growing up, where you lived growing up in Great Falls, and how many were in your household.
Okay. Well, when I was first born, we were out in the country.
In Belt, east of Great
Belt.
Falls.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. And that was a little house with no electricity or indoor plumbing. And my dad built a windmill, and we had one light bulb in the kitchen. My mom, they thought, was developing rheumatoid arthritis. So I think because of that, they moved back into Great Falls and lived here for a while. We lived on 4th Avenue North. Two different houses, 1921 and 2025. And while we were in Great Falls, my two younger siblings were born, so then there were five of us. And
would you mention the members of your family, your siblings?
Okay. My oldest is Kathy. She's 7 years older. Roger, named after Roger Curry, was 2 years older. I might mention Catherine was obviously a family name also. Then younger than me was Fred, and he was named after his grandfather, Fred Kuntz. And the youngest was Patricia. Yes.
Okay, great. And what kind of responsibilities did you have at home growing up? Did you have chores? How did you share the household tasks?
Okay. One thing my mother would say was she did not want us to work as hard as her mother made her work at home doing household tasks. So she was fairly careful about how much she gave us. My job was usually to dry dishes. I will mention that when we moved out to the country the second time when I was 10, Kathy was old enough that she did not move with us. So at that point I took over on, you know, drying dishes. Mom always washed. I set the table, cleared the table. We had a big garden, so I helped take care of the garden and the flower beds. The other thing was my younger sister, Patricia, was handicapped. She was profoundly retarded. So I was a babysitter for her. When she was little, it wasn't too hard to take her places. But when she was older, it was too hard. So often I would stay home and take care of her. So that was, you know, kind of one of my important things. Or whenever I came home from school, Mom would need to cook dinner and, you know, be doing things like that. So I would take care of Patty. For the most part, if I played piano, she'd bounce on the davenport. So I'd grab a handful of cookies and put them on the piano, and Patty and I would eat cookies, and I'd play piano, and she bounced. And that was, you know, one of the kind of daily chores, you might say.
Is Patty still alive today?
Yes, she's in a group home here in Great Falls.
All right.
Yeah.
And how long did she stay at your family home before she was able to go to a group home to live?
Well, she was only at home for 7 years, and then she went to Boulder. They didn't have group homes back then. This would have been early 60s. And so that's what was encouraged by the doctors and so forth at that time. So she was there for over 4 years. So she's only been here
40 years.
40 years,
okay.
At Boulder.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So she's been in Great Falls just 4 or 5 years, and I can see her much more often. So
great,
yeah.
That's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Could you tell us a little bit about your formal education?
Okay. Well, I went to University of Montana and got a BA in education, elementary education, and from there went out and taught in Washington. And then I went and got, in Washington you had to get a fifth year to teach beyond 4 years. So I went to Central Washington State and got a fifth year in science education and a library minor. Liked the library so much, I ended up getting a master's in Denver, University of Denver.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what things did you involve yourself in extracurricular in your secondary education, your post-secondary education?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What were your interests and hobbies?
Well, high school through college, I played percussion. I was in the band, symphony band or marching band. That was great fun. The university in Missoula was known as the dancing school, so I got to be in the band as we danced out on the football field. I guess that was the main thing. Otherwise, I was busy studying. I loved to read, and I did sewing, made most of my clothes. Yeah.
Are you still in close contact with those cousins that you grew up with that were close, like family to you? Did you
mm-hmm.
talk a little bit about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, there were 5 of us born within 3 years. I was the oldest, and next came Sherry Kelly. She was 6 months younger, and we were just kind of buddies all the way through. Our mothers were very good friends, and so Sherry and her family lived on Central Avenue. I was on 4th Avenue North, so we would walk and meet each other halfway and then go play at the house of one or the other. So we spent a lot of time together beyond just, you know, any of the holidays or family gatherings. We just got together and kind of ignored the rest of the family.
Mm-hmm.
Then Sheila Flaherty
mm-hmm.
and Nancy Kelly. Sheila was like, 2 years younger, Nancy 3 years younger. They were both born on August 22nd, 1 year apart. They were close buddies, but of course as we got older, the four of us kind of formed into a group. And their families would go up to the lake in the summertime, and they would take me along with them. So we had like a week together in the summer, and our families were friends, and so, you know, our mothers were, so we got together other times. The youngest was Bob Fox, poor fellow. And so sometimes he would try to join us, but I think he was pretty bored with us. He passed away last April. But the rest of us still kind of get together. Sherry's in California, but this summer, for example, she comes up summer, she's a yoga teacher. So she comes up for workshops outside of Helena, so I go up and see her. Nancy is in Sydney. Sheila and Kalispell, that's as far apart as you can get and still be in Montana.
Yeah.
So we get together once in a while, but not very often.
All right, great.
Yeah.
How about family members that were involved in the military? You made one reference earlier. What can you tell us about family members that were in the military?
Well, let's see. Roger Curry was in Spanish-American War, and his older brother William, he came about 1882 and was in the army. And I think he was discharged in 1888, so he was in the army way back
In the
then.
U.S. Army.
Yes.
Okay.
I think, one of my mom's sisters, her older sister Catherine, married Bill Fox, and he was a CB in the,
Navy.
yes, would have been.
Okay.
And I think that's it.
Great, great. Okay, why don't we move on to religious, social practices, rites, and festivals? You did talk a little bit about your family gatherings. When you were growing up, did you recognize that you belonged in an Irish American community, or did everyone seem about the same as you?
I think because of the extended family, I was very aware of being Irish American. I was also very aware that my Kuntz last name didn't fit. A lot of my relatives could never quite say it or even spell it. It was like it
Your
was,
Irish relatives?
yes, first cousins. I mean, not
Yes.
distant. It was kind of like, but so I always thought of myself as Irish. And when people would assume I was German, I was kind of shocked. I was like, why do you think that? And, it just, as I was younger,
I
I was
can
very
relate to
Irish.
that. Did you grow up as a member of a church or religious group?
Yes, we were very much into the Catholic Church. We went to Catholic school at St. Gerard's. And of course, once we moved out in the country, we didn't, but we always went to church. That was something my mom was very strong in, and I think her mother before her.
Were there any church rituals, rites, or feast days like St. Patrick's Day that you were memorable to you that you practiced or observed?
Well, St. Patrick's Day is one, but that's the one holiday when all the adults got together and left all of us kids at home.
Where did they go?
So they went to somebody's home, and I think they had a great time without the kids. So I don't know much about it other than I always had to babysit. I mentioned the Christmas, and that was when we always got together Christmas Eve. And as a part of it, when it got to be heading toward midnight, a lot of us would head out to midnight mass. And then come back again, and the party would, start to break up. But midnight mass was a part of Christmas Eve. It wasn't just, the family.
Okay. Let's see. And do you still participate in your faith that you were raised in?
I do.
Okay. And have those traditions that you grew up with, have they changed Christmas Eves and St. Patrick's Day as the family has grown and separated? Has that changed?
Yes, the Christmas Eve thing. My grandmother Curry, and she's the one we kind of went to her home. We continued that one. She died in like 68, 69, and that party continued until about 1999. And then enough relatives, my generation really spread. So there's not a lot of us left in town, and so that kind of fell apart.
Okay. Let's see. We talked about your community and history as you grew up, and what members of your family were doing. Thinking about those members of your family and your three Irish branches of your family, would you say that there are shared physical traits among family members? And
Yes, there is one, kind of a negative one coming through the Rafferty's. They tend to develop some form of arthritis. My Uncle John was had rheumatoid arthritis. He went off to college and came home, and he never worked. He just, his body, you know, this was back in the 30s, and so they didn't know what to do. So he basically was, lived at home, kind of an invalid. My mom, they also thought, had rheumatoid arthritis, but it never developed that badly. One of the, Patrick Rafferty, he was a first cousin to my grandmother. He was known as the Stone Man of Columbus Hospital here. And it was some form of arthritis. It was not rheumatoid. It was worse than that.
And they called him Stone Man because of his physical characteristics?
Yes, yes. He spent like 20 years in the hospital.
Oh.
He just laid there. So my cousin Sherry is developing the same kind that he had. It begins with an A, Anglio, something or other. When we went to Ireland, we met another one with that and heard about one in England. So that particular characteristic is there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's see. Let's move on to some other things to see if they impacted your family. Within your family, did you have any special sayings or expressions? And if so, what were they?
Oh. You know, my grandmother Curry was known for her frank remarks. And off the top of my head, I don't remember any.
Well, if they pop up during our conversation, feel free to add it.
Okay.
All right. Okay. How about food? Do you have any special food traditions in your family? And do you have any recipes that have been passed down?
You know, growing up, we always had to have boiled potatoes for dinner. Dinner wasn't dinner unless you had a boiled potato. Trying to think if there was anything else. My sister Kathy tells the story. She married a fellow that was German, and he insisted that she put garlic on her pork roast. And my mother hated garlic, and Kathy didn't like it. So she was talking to my grandmother Curry one day, and she says, "Oh, Bill makes me put garlic on my pork roast." And grandmother Curry spoke up and said, "Well, I always do that." So that was one that we discovered. But I don't have any recipes. You know, it was mostly meat and potatoes with a vegetable.
Very
That's
basic.
How we ate. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Any holiday foods that came out just at your Christmas Eve celebrations or anything?
Not that I can think of.
Mm-mm. Okay. All right. Let's move on to mementos and keepsakes. What family heirlooms or keepsakes and mementos do you possess?
Well, I have this one. This is it's called the Agnus Dei plate. My mother gave it to her mother. So it's not real, real old, but the significance is that my grandmother, Sarah Ann or Minnie, grew up on a farm in Ballyholen. And when they were out in the work fields every noon, the bells would ring and they'd say the Angelus, I guess it is. And so this is the workers out in the field, Irish workers, saying the Angelus. And so that was kind of a memory of her time in Ireland. You know, I have letters. I don't know if you would consider those keepsakes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Anything of interest that you particularly?
Well, one is a letter, and I think I have it on the piano, but I can talk about it without looking at it. When my grandfather Roger was in the Philippines, he wrote a letter back home to his brother Mike in Great Falls, describing what was going on. And that letter was published in the Anaconda newspaper. Apparently it was a pretty major newspaper at its time, so it was also distributed in Great Falls. So that letter, and we've got it's literally ripped out of that page of the newspaper, so it's the actual newspaper printing of Roger's letter, and that's kind of neat to have.
And maybe we could include a photocopy of that in your provenance for your okay. Very good. Yeah. And that was during the Spanish-American War?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Great. All right. How about photo albums and scrapbooks, and home movies? What kind of memorabilia do you have handed down?
I do. I have a picture of Roger Curry in his, I guess you'd say, soldier's uniform, before he goes to war. He's like 18 years old. I have a couple of them right here. I have a picture of the Cahalan Brothers Harp Orchestra, and then a picture of their sisters all with their instruments, because they sometimes added in. Those are two that I think, or three, that I think are pretty neat. I also have a picture of my grandfather, Roger Curry, in his fireman's cap. And then there's one of my grandmother, Curry. I don't know how old she is. She has white hair, but it's the only kind of professional picture we have of her. So that's kind of a keepsake for us. And then one photo of the Curry siblings. So it's my mom with her four sisters and brother. When she looks like she might be 8 or 10 years old. So it's an old
Were one. All of the Curry siblings born in the U.S.?
Yes, they were. Mm-hmm.
All right. Good, and maybe we can include some of those pictures in your file too, some
yes,
copies.
Yes.
Great. Mm-hmm. Okay. Have you or any members of your family traveled to Ireland?
Yes. In 06, I went to Ireland with 8 of my cousins.
And yeah, talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, we had a great time. We actually went in 3 different groups and eventually got together.
Was Jim Gillespie one of those cousins?
Yes,
okay.
He was. He and his wife and his son, Bill, they flew to England and then came to Belfast. Sheila, Nancy, and I, buddies from way back, flew into Shannon, and we came from a different direction. And then Brian Flaherty and his brother, Tim Flaherty, also flew in. But they came several days later, and they flew into Shannon. When Nancy and Sheila asked me to go with them, they asked me what I wanted to do, and I said, the one thing I want to do is find the McKennas. I said, I don't care what else we go see. You pick the rest of the trip. We were going to be there for 2 weeks. And I said, but I want to see if I can find the McKennas. And we kind of figured out where Ballyholen was, and I had done enough research. I thought I could maybe find them. So they agreed. And, you know, you have to drive on the wrong side of the road and sit on the wrong side. They both drove. I didn't do any. But we had to drive clear up through northern part of Ireland over into Tyrone. And we stopped at this little inn and bed and breakfast. We were going to try to stay in a little town called Clogher, and there was no room there. So we went on to a place called Annacloy. And lucky for us, we walked through the door, and the woman said, are you doing family research? And we said, yes. And she said, okay, here's a man to call. I think his name was Jack Johnston. So I called him up that night, and I said, I'm looking for McKenna family. He says, everybody here's a McKenna. I haven't researched him. I can't help you. And I said, well, I've got the names of my grandmother's married daughters who stayed here in Ireland. If I give you those names, so I did, and he had researched one of those families. He said, I'll call you back. The next morning, we were going to head off to church. It was Sunday. We thought we'd go to the parish and ask the priest. And as we were going out the door, we got a call from this Jack Johnston who said, I think you're Elish McKenna's. And you know, you should be able to find old Charlie, and this is where the farm is. And he told, but we don't know where any of it is, but he's telling us, and I'm writing it all down. So we head off to church, and the church is out in the middle of the country, and it's got graveyards all around, but there's no town. So after Mass, we go up to the church, or to the priest, and we say, could you tell us where our McKenna relatives are? And he said, no, why are you Americans coming here? We're all McKennas. And I said, well, we're Elish McKennas. Oh, he says, yes, they live, blah, 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 follow me. And so we followed him, and he just pointed and drove off. So we had to walk up to the door, knock on it, and say, you know, it's a Sunday morning, we've not called ahead, nothing. And the lady brought us in, beautiful, you know, nice home, sat us down, and she said her husband would be right in. And so we sat there and waited. She was very polite. And this guy walks in. He's a, you know, Irish tend to be short. This is a guy over 6 feet. And I need to tell you that when my grandmother, Minnie, came, she was this is a physical characteristic I forgot to mention. She was like 5'10". Her brother, Jim, who came with her, was 6'5". So Minnie was half a head taller than her husband. And I'll show you a picture where he would never stand beside her because he didn't want to look so short. But anyway, this big 6-footer walks in. He crosses his arms like this and he says, "What do you want?" He didn't want anything to do with Americans. So I began telling him the history that I knew. And I said, you know, Frank and Catherine lived on this farm. And in the 1910 census, it looks like their son, Patrick, took over. And his first son was John Patrick. No, his first son was Patrick Joseph. And the guy said, "That's my father." And he sat down, friendly, bring out the cookies, the drinks. He was fine with it. The old house was still there, the house that my grandmother grew up in. He said, "Yeah, go ahead, take pictures, whatever." So we did that. And then he gave us the name to go on to the next relative, who happened to be the graveyard groundskeeper at the church we had been to. But he took us and showed us, you know, there's all kinds of McKenna graves. He knew which ones were our family and told us stories and showed us the graves. He sent us down the road. This time we met another one of his cousins, but her father's still living. He would have been a first cousin to my mother. So we got to meet him. He's in his 80s, little white-haired fellow, you know, comes up to about my ear. And so we got to spend a Sunday afternoon visiting with him and his daughter. And then we had to leave. The next day we went and met Jim and Amy and her son up in Northern Tyrone. I'm forgetting the name of the town. That's where Catherine Rafferty grew up. And some Rafferties from Belfast came over, 4 siblings, and they showed us the home where our great-grandmother, Catherine Rafferty, grew up. That was amazing, yeah. So we, you know, hung around there, took pictures, and from there we headed off, met another Rafferty relative. Then it was a big Gillespie reunion for Jim and Amy. So that was several days at the reunion. But from there we then went into Mayo. Sheila and Brian wanted to visit the Flaherty Castle. We did that. And then we went and found the Curry relatives in Irish Town. They took us to see the house where my grandfather Roger grew up. So in one trip, saw those 3 homes. So, and by that time it was time to get back and hop on the plane and leave. So that was amazing. You know, we didn't so much see the sights as we met family and saw those historic homes where they grew up. So that was amazing.
Oh, fabulous. Yeah. That's wonderful. So glad you got to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now changing subjects again, you talked quite a bit about the music in your family growing up, and we'll see some pictures of the band that they traveled with. How about funerals? Did you ever participate in particular rites, or were there wakes in your family? How was a death handled in your Irish family?
Well, obviously we'd always have a rosary the night before, and then the next day would be mass, go out to the graveyard, and then we'd head to somebody's home, and it would be ours. You know, there was always drink involved, lots of food involved, and we just hung out until the wee hours, you know. Yeah.
Celebrating that person's life and your lives together.
Yes.
Okay. Are there any particular Irish traditions that you learned that you particularly associate with your Irish heritage, besides your piano playing that you brought up from your mother? Were there any other things that you would attribute to your Irish heritage?
You know, I'm not sure if it's Irish or not, but I know, you know, my Winnie Cahalan Kuntz grandmother did all the handwork, needlework, tatting, and she did want to, she was not feeling well, but she came over one afternoon and was very insistent to teach me how to tat with two colors. You know, I'd learn how to tat with one, and it was time to learn how to tat with two. So I think that's the one.
That's a tradition she wanted to pass down to stay behind her. Mm-hmm. All right, very nice. Let's see. Let's move on to great moments of sorrow or joy. And if you were to write the history of the Irish in Montana, what would you include for future generations? What would you like to tell your nieces, nephews, mm-hmm. in future generations about your wonderful family you grew up with and your Irish heritage?
Now, you said something about great sorrow, or is that...
Either sorrow or joys, either whatever that prominent memory might be for you that you would share.
Okay. Well, I guess the sorrow was the part that was leaping out because of some incidences. And I have some newspaper articles here. I'll just briefly
talk about
them.
Sure.
Some of these I knew about from my mom, and some I found out about later. I went into the police station once for something I needed to report, and I was standing there waiting, and at the top of the list of police killed in the line of action was Luke Curry. I thought, So I did research into it, and this was
here in Great Falls?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And what I found out was this was a policeman killed about 1898. This was the Luke Curry we're not sure he was related. We think he was, but he seemed to have traveled with Roger's brother, Michael. The two of them seemed to have come from Ireland together, married together in San Francisco, moved to Fort Benton together, came to Great Falls. Not too many years after, Luke was shot and killed, leaving behind five children. Those children kind of became cousins to my mom. You know, mom would say they're cousins. I'm not quite sure how they're related, but, you know, and their dad died, and so that was the tragedy. The other tragedy my mom told me about happened in 1924. Michael, again, it was his friend Luke who was shot, and his son William was shot and killed. He was walking home. He was, you know, like 25.
Is this in Great Falls also?
This is in Great Falls.
Okay.
Michael Curry family home was 909 4th Avenue North, and it stayed in the family for many, many years. You know, like a son took over and lived there too. So William was walking with his young wife, carrying their 2-year-old child, walking up the street, and there's a convent on the corner. And so he was in front of the convent. And a guy, young fellow, came up and searched all his pockets, and, you know, William was holding this 2-year-old and wasn't, you know, just told him to leave him alone, and the man shot him in the heart. And Walter, one of William's brothers, came out, got him into a passenger car of someone going by, but he died when he got to the hospital. And I think that same year, I think this really affected the family. It was a family of 6 brothers and 1 sister. Roger's family was 5 girls and 1 boy, so they kind of were opposites, didn't necessarily blend together because, you know. But that same year, Walter, the brother that took him to the hospital, he was the first one to move out of Great Falls, moved to Billings. And then Luke Jay, the brother, Michael's brother, moved back to New York. He left, took his family and left. So there was some breaking apart of the Curry family at that point. And for Michael, a couple years after that, I was doing research and noticed that his wife Ellen was listing herself as a widow, and Michael was not dead. He didn't die until years later. And so I began researching and trying to, well, where's Michael? He was still in town. He was living in a different boarding place every year, different job every couple years. I have no proof But I think he lost his best friend to a shooting. He lost his son. I think he maybe became alcoholic and, you know, abandoned family. So I think that was a great tragedy in that family. They didn't speak about it much, but there was some real hard feeling. I have a letter that was written from Brother William in California. He sent $100 to have a tombstone for Michael, and he's angry that it's not being done. So the family didn't even want to put a tombstone on Michael's grave. So I think that was a real, you know, those two deaths and Michael somehow not handling it, I would say, was a big tragedy. And the family kind of started breaking apart.
Is Michael's grave recognized today?
Yes, I went out there to look. And it does have a gravestone on it.
Okay. And you wouldn't happen to have a picture of it, would you?
I do.
That would be great. I'd like to include it in your archive also.
Okay.
All right. I think that's very interesting. And great joys? Any great joys?
Well, I think children were of great joy. My uncle, Bill Kelly, operated a camera going, I have movie film of me going back when I was like a year and a half. So all the Christmases, he is focusing on all the kids. And you can tell it's a very, you know, the adults are sitting around the edge of the room. The middle of the room is full of all these little kids opening packages, and Santa comes. And it just seemed like it was a Christmas celebration, but I think they very much sat back and enjoyed their children. And it was a very, I was recently, Nancy sent me a new DVD that goes from about 1946 to 48. And you can just see the happiness. Our parents are in their 30s. And, you know.
I'm glad to hear that you have digitally re-recorded those movies, because perhaps we could also include a copy of that in your packet of information about your family. It would be wonderful to have those.
Okay, you bet.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that kind of wraps up the information from the biographical section. Is there anything else that you would like to share today or add to our profile?
You know, I would like to say a little bit more about Roger Currie.
Please do.
Just because he seemed to be a very talented man of all trades. They bought a home at 1515 4th Avenue North, and he just kept remodeling for it to fit the family. He turned the pantry into a bedroom when John was unable to go up and downstairs, and so made a bedroom for him.
Was John a child of his?
Yes, John was his son, the one that had rheumatoid arthritis and became very crippled.
Okay.
And the girls tended to stay at home until they married, and some didn't marry till they were almost 30. So I think, you know, they were struggling for money. I think they did a lot of trying to figure out how to help John, spent a lot of money there. So they eventually, he turned the upstairs into an apartment, put in a bathroom, kitchen. And then Kelly was recently telling me about, he had to dig out in the basement. I don't know why, but her mother told her the story of Roger rolling wheelbarrows full of dirt out of the basement, and he built a bedroom down there for the two younger girls who were still at home. He built a garage onto the house. The money they didn't spend on John for college, they bought a 1935 Ford, and John did learn to drive that, and the Ford's still in our chicken house out of the farm. We still have it, I hate to say it.
That's wonderful.
But a couple stories about Roger. He kind of had a sense of humor. And this is a story about him that's been told. They had inspection at the firehouse, and so all the firemen had to, you know, get dressed up in the uniform and get all spiffied and stand in line, and the inspector came, and he'd go down the line and, you know, ask the fellow his name and kind of check him out, and then he'd point to something on the fire truck and say, "And what's that? What's its purpose?" and so forth. So he's coming down the line, and he comes to Roger, points to something on the truck and says, "Well, what's the purpose of that?" And with a straight face, Roger says, "Well, sir, the purpose of that is to polish." So obviously, he probably didn't know what it was, but he came up with an answer, straight faced.
It was probably a piece of brass.
Right. So, And another story about him, my mom would tell, they would have people come and stay at the house, you know. And so the kids would have to give up their beds. And so she tells of the one time she went to her dad and said, well, I'll sleep in the bathtub. And he asked her, well, are you sure you want to do that? And she says, yeah. So he let her. You know, he's just kind of a, he checked it out with her and tried to make sure. So bedtime, she took her pillow and blanket and hopped in the bathtub. And so the next morning, of course, she said she was stiff and sore. She went to her dad and said, I don't want to sleep in the bathtub that night. And he said, yeah, I didn't think so. But, you know, he just let her. He didn't insist, no, no, you have, he just let her.
Yeah.
So kind of a kind gentleman. The one other story is that he couldn't milk the milk cow. The milk cow wouldn't let him if he was too rough or what, so Minnie always had to milk the cow. I don't know if he just didn't want to or what, but anyway, I think he had a sense of humor and seemed to be, you know, very kind and gentle with his kids.
You mentioned that you still have the 1935 Ford on the farm. Is the farm still in the family? And could you talk a little bit about that since you lived out there?
Oh, sure. It's basically a wheat farm. We had a few cattle, not a lot, maybe like 25. And it was an old farmhouse built in like 1900s, 1902 or something. So it also did not have indoor plumbing. And Mom said, I'm not moving out there till you put a bathroom in. So my dad, who was kind of handy like his father-in-law, put in the bathroom with the help of his brother. And I remember they had me stand there to figure out the height of the sink. And I was just a kid, so the sink is still kind of low because I was just a little kid. But they put in a bathroom in the back hall. And we did have a milk cow for a while. My mom was kind of a city girl. She says, I'm not having chickens this time. You know, she just said, I'm not going to do the whole farm thing. I want indoor plumbing. And, you know, she said, I gave up a nice house in Great Falls and you got to put in a bathroom and, you know, make a few concessions here. But they seemed to do very well out there. And my dad's brother had a farm nearby, so that was kind of put us closer to his family.
And do members of your family still own the farm today?
I own it with my brothers. It's just in CRP, you know, the crop reduction program. My younger brother and I have a garden out there, though, so we still head out there and take care of the garden. So we keep it up. It's not, you know, just empty. And then when my older brother Roger lives in Colorado, so if he comes up here to stay, he stays out there.
So the house is still there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Great, yeah. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Well, it's been just a delight visiting with you today. Are there any other things that you would like to mention? Part
just
of your family
here.
And your Irish heritage?
I think we got most of that in with your questions, so thank you. That was great.
All right. Thank you, Una.
Uh-huh.